This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
It's Hoffman Show. We're on the Team 980. Always live as well on the free Odyssey app. Final hour here on a Thursday. And a Thursday means on a regular week, which we're finally having one of, in terms of the Commander's schedule. Cliff Kingsbury, Joe Witt Jr. speak to the media. And that means it's time for their edition of the Pick Six.
The six biggest Commander storylines.
It is caught!
Delivered at 6 o'clock sharp. It's the Pick Six at six.
We set out to find a leader, someone who could take this franchise to the next level and build an elite team that consistently competes for championships.
Let's get things started with three thoughts from Cliff Kingsbury, who spoke today for the first time in a couple of weeks, trying to get his offense back on track after his two toughest tests of the season.
Number one.
The offensive execution obviously has not been as sharp against Pittsburgh and against Philadelphia. That is hard against good opponents. So is that kind of what has happened here? Has it been the good opponents? Has it been other factors, lack of practice? Kingsbury on the diagnosis.
In what regard? Obviously, the Thursday night game was not our best. But like when you just overall execution, you say? Yeah, I think there's a lot of things. Played two really good defenses, first off, and then just having the ability to be on the practice field, continue to get reps together and build. I think this is the first week we've been able to do that consistently as a unit, put in a full week, and so hopefully that pays off. But, you know, still had a chance in the fourth quarter. Our guys battled even when we weren't playing our best, which I appreciated, but just nailing the details, calling better plays. I mean, overall, collectively as an offense, we can be better. And I think a week of real practice will help that.
A lot of the stuff that they are in need of improving is stuff that practice helps a lot with. Timing, precision, you know, just being certain of certain things, as opposed to that split second, half second, quarter second of hesitation that can make all the difference in the NFL. Decisiveness. And so I do think getting back in the practice field, having a regular routine and rhythm is really important. That said, there are a lot of questions starting to swirl, and we've certainly asked them as well, about Cliff Kingsbury's history of regressing in the second half of the season. Production just doesn't match back half compared to first half. Let's just say Cliff is not buying that as a thing.
I would have to see the what you're talking about historically, like the references, but yeah, I don't have any plans to do anything to break that trend that I know of. Yeah. I mean, I would have to see what years you're talking about. So I was thinking about doing triple option. Like, is that what you're thinking? Like, I don't know. Like, yeah, we're going to do what we do. So
And it's kind of a funny thing. The damning answer there, the one that's going to sound really bad in 3 weeks if they've continued to struggle, is, well, I'm not doing anything to change that. And it's like, well, you should. But if you don't know what if he is not aware of the trend, which I kind of doubt, although Cliff went to Thailand after Arizona. Maybe he's not aware of media narratives at all. He really is not tuned in. And if so, God bless him. But I do think that they will find continual ways to self-scout. And he's talked about this in previous press conferences, center. Like, we got to self-scout. We got to make sure that we're, you know, not being too predictable. And in that way, they just have to keep doing what they've been doing. Find ways to use some of the previous tendencies to set up something else. And they've done a good job of that this year. It's just got to last 17 weeks because that is what the NFL is.
Number two.
Obviously, Jaden Daniels' performance in the spotlight as well. Why has he been missing some of these passes? Why hasn't he been able to run quite as much? Back to the practice thing, Cliff?
Yeah, I think you just take it for what it is on both accounts. You know, the passing game has got to be precise, and you got to be out there going full speed with your receivers to nail it. and then you're playing against two good defenses that make it a challenge, even if you are full speed, even if you're on point with everything. So I think you take both into account and you just focus on what you feel you can do to get better. You don't buy into one or the other too much and say, oh, it was this scheme or it was just that we didn't practice. You say, how do we get better when we do get the chance to practice?
I think another interesting answer from Cliff earlier, he was asked about the injury stuff and he's like, I'm not going to divulge whether we changed play calling, yada, yada, yada. And it's like, oh, so you probably did on some level. And I wonder to what and like what the gradient was, because we know from Dan Quinn that they definitely took some stuff off the table in the Chicago game when he all of a sudden came back. It's like, wait, is he's not going to play this week, right? He's not going to play. Oh, he's playing. But they did not have the full playbook available. And then after that, they were like, no, everything's better. Okay. Well, the running stats have not been quite as good. So what's going on there? Is that a different approach? Is that something from Cliff? Is it something from the play calling? Is it something Jaden is just like trying to be more dedicated to sticking in the pocket? So all that stuff, I think, is interesting. But I think the bigger question now is they've come off this mini bye. He's seen Philadelphia. He's seen Pittsburgh. Is like, what's up with Jaden's confidence? Is this a guy that all of a sudden has been shaken at all? Is anything different? Did perhaps whatever, you know, Cliff doesn't want to divulge, is that change his confidence in any way? And Cliff Kingsbury, I think very much is going to say no to that.
No, he's pretty much who he is. I mean, he's competitive as all get out. And like I said, for him to put us in that position in the fourth quarter in both games to even have a chance to win, I thought was really impressive. And he's very tough and very competitive. And I know he earned a lot of respect from his teammates just by battling the last few weeks.
He's battled. Now he's got to go out and play. And we'll see what he does against the Cowboys.
Number three.
Most important thing on the scouting report against the Cowboys. Number 11, Micah Parsons. A absolute game wrecker of a player. And that is obviously something Cliff has dealt with some other guys this year. But what is the challenge of Parsons in particular?
Yeah, Mike is a game wrecker. He's one of those. You know, I thought Jalen Carter had a tremendous game against us. He was awesome and put us behind the chains several times. And Mike is the guy who can do the same thing. And if you don't have a plan for him, every snap, it takes one snap for him to take the ball away. And all of a sudden, you know, it can be a long day. So he's a guy you got to have a plan for. He's dynamic, plays hard. And, yeah, he's one of the you know, handful guys in the league that can really change a game by himself.
So here's the thing about Micah Parsons 2024 edition, and especially for Cliff Kingsbury. One, no one knows Micah Parsons' game better than Dan Quinn. So I imagine there's some real conversations about, hey, he's going to try to do this. And this is both DQ to Cliff. This is probably DQ to Bobby Johnson. This is probably DQ sitting in O-line meetings this week going, hey, Andrew Wiley, you're going to deal with Micah. Here's what he likes to do. I know because I taught him how to do it. And this is the way that he thinks about rushing. And so that is definitely an advantage for Washington to have that knowledge, because Dan knows Micah as well as anyone. And Joe knows him some, but Joe's focused on the defensive side of the ball. Like Dan being the head coach and the guy who was the DC and a defensive line guy by trade. Plus you have a couple of the guys who were on the D-line staff in Dallas with Dan also around. So there's just a lot of institutional knowledge of Micah Parsons that is very, very helpful. So that's one thing. Two, what made Micah such a nightmare in the Quinn defenses was they moved him around in the same way that they have moved Frankie Luvu around this year. You've seen what it's done for Luvu. Luvu is not Parsons, but he has had one of the most, if not the most productive year of his career, because he's constantly getting good matchups and one-on-ones with guards, with centers, with tackles, but like in specific situations that allows him to be a menace, and he's gotten sacks out of it. He's gotten pressures. He's caused problems for offenses. It's not how Mike Zimmer operates with Micah Parsons. Parsons is no longer a guy who's moving around, getting matchups, who if we call a slide to one side in the huddle, we're not going to have to completely reconfigure our protection at the line of scrimmage because we can't even slide because Micah Parsons is lined up over the center. There's nowhere to slide. We're just screwed. Or we have to slide one way and hope that the guard and center can figure it out and that Parsons even rushes to that side in the first place, because if, you know, you're trying to double him with the right guard and the center and he rushes plays to his right, which is the offensive left. Well, now that right guard's not doing a whole lot. He just attacks the left shoulder of the center, and the center's got trying to slide over. Right guard's trying to get over. Now you got this big one-on-one for DeMarcus Lawrence, by the way, on the right tackle. Like, all kinds of problems. Michael Parsons lines up at left defensive end, which is over the right side of the offense, so he's going to be up against Andrew Wiley. And unlike last year, where Wiley would then be left on an island to die, they're just going to get chip help. And they don't have other players that scare you to the level that Tank Lawrence has in the past, and some of the other guys, Dorrance Armstrong, has in the past even. They don't have the supplementary rushers. Inside, they've got some guys that are good, but that this offensive line can handle. And that just makes the protection calls and everything a lot easier. And so, yes, can Micah Parsons wreck the game? Absolutely. Will Micah Parsons have some impactful play? Probably. He's Micah Parsons. But he's not as hard to deal with because they don't utilize him as well as years past. And that's not to say that Micah isn't the same player, but you are only as good as the opportunities that you only produce as much as the opportunities you get, and he doesn't get the same opportunities. And by the way, because Dallas's run defense has been so horrendous, there's not as many obvious pass rush situations anyway. We'll hear from Joe Witt Jr. next here on the Hoffman Show, the defensive part of the pick six. But first, let's get an update on the latest in the world of women's sports presented by Wawa. Gotta have a Wawa. It's Hoffman Show. We're on the Team 980, always live as well on the free Odyssey app. Coming up at 6:30, it is a delayed edition of Competition Wednesday. We know that it was Competition Wednesday, yesterday, but I wasn't there. So, you know, that's going to probably affect the ability for Anthony and I to pick games. So I will pull up the old spreadsheet. We'll see how we did last week. Someone's going to have to. If Anthony loses, he will spin the wheel of mediocre punishment. If I lose, I can't spin the wheel because I'm currently in Ohio, doing the show, remotely. Be back in DC on Monday. But Uncle Craig duty is not quite relinquished yet. And so, I will, Anthony, have to spin the wheel when I return.
Or would you like me to spin it for you?
No, I don't trust you.
Well, I mean, if I was to spin the wheel, how would you know you can trust me? These are very important questions. Very important.
That's a very good point, because we don't have any video contact. I might have to FaceTime you on my actual phone.
All right, we'll tell you this.
To watch this.
I will tell you this. Chris Russell, for some reason, is still at the station at 6:22 p.m.
He's probably going to the Caps game.
Yep. Essek is here, too. I see Essek, too.
I bet you they're going to the Caps game. By the way, we have not had a chance to share this yet. But breaking news a little bit ago is that the news is in on Ovechkin. He has a partially broken fibula. He is out 4 to 6 weeks. So could have been a lot worse. Fibula, I mean, if it's a clean break, like, he's out for basically the season. So they'll be able to, I guess, put screws in, whatever they need to do, and get that healed up. So that's the latest on Alex Ovechkin. 4 to 6 weeks is the injury news there. So, first game tonight for the Caps without Ovechkin this season. And we'll see, how they do. They've been off to an amazing start, and, if they can keep that up, and then see what Alex can do when he gets back, as he's chasing all the records that he's got out there, et cetera, et cetera. And it was off to just a torrid start this season. Okay. With all of that said, we'll get to the Wheel of Mediocre Punishment, and the picks in a little bit. But let's keep going, with Joe Witt Jr. And the Commanders defensive coordinator spoke today, as he does each and every Thursday, ahead of a matchup where there are a lot of familiar faces on the other side of the ball for him.
Probably more challenging because, you know, I was with Mike for a long time, 11 years in Green Bay, 3 years there. We've had a lot of conversations. We do this thing called Cross the Hall there, where the defensive coaches go work with the offensive players. And so I've gone back and looked at all my Cross the Hall meetings. What have I told them that's difficult? You know, and same thing with Kellen. He, you know, the big play, he sort of hit us on something that I said in one of those Cross the Hall meetings was difficult, you know, but I knew it. We already knew that was going to come, but he hit it. And so that's just That's part of it when you're at an organization and you're trying to win, you're not trying to hold anything back. But when coaches start going to other places, you know, information goes with it. So that's part of the NFL football.
It's Joe Witt Jr. talking about having a face off against Mike McCarthy, who he spent a lot of time with. And that is going to be a challenge this week for Witt and this defense, as McCarthy knows what he wants to do. The good news for Witt is he knows what McCarthy wants to do. But those cross the hall meetings, I think, are really, really interesting. I've never heard that before, a phrase exactly that way. I know these kinds of things do sometimes happen with the NFL when teams, especially in the offseason, take time to let the cross training happen. Hey, DBs coach, go coach the wide receivers. That way they know what DBs are looking for. And maybe you can clean up a route because the receiver is giving a tell that the receiver's coach didn't even see because he looks at it like a receiver. And the DBs coach is going to look at it like a DB. And so Joe has had this experience with not just Kellen Moore, who he just faced with the Eagles, but with Mike McCarthy time after time after time. Then you also have the familiarity on the personnel side of it, right? It's not just Joe Witt and Mike McCarthy who know each other so well. You have Tyler Biadasz and Dorrance Armstrong who have gone up against some of the players they're going to face on Sunday. So is there an advantage either way for guys like Dorrance Armstrong and Dante Fowler on Witt's defense going against offensive linemen they have faced in guys like Terrence Steele and Tyler Smith along that Cowboys offensive line?
I think it gives us some of advantage, you know, because he's lined up and played those guys. He knows, how to, work them and what they like, what they don't like. So it gives him advantage.
Just are good. You take them and you need to use them for all 60 minutes. That gets us to number five in our pick six.
Number five.
And the Commanders defense has actually played really well for the first 50 minutes of every game since week 7. And some of their overall stats have shown that. Like, they're way up there in EPA per play against the pass. Their run defense is obviously pulling that down. But even the run defense, if you could, slide the shifter to just the first 50 minutes, like, it's been some big runs late against teams, and especially last week against Philly, where they kept Saquon pretty bottled up, and then all of a sudden, boom, boom, explosive late, and you're dead in the water. All your numbers look terrible, and the game looks terrible because he scores on both of those plays. And that is especially hurtful for Joe Witt Jr. because he and Dan Quinn preach making winning time plays. And we've seen some of the post-game locker room speeches and all that kind of stuff from Quinn talking about, hey, we've got to make winning plays, and we did against Chicago, and in the locker room and all that stuff. So how does Joe Witt get his defense to play that full 60, and what are some of the winning time plays that he wants to see made?
Well, we didn't get the fourth down there, all right, they hit the explosive pass, okay? All right, we had opportunity. We got the ball out. We should have picked that ball up, okay? The two big runs that they hit late in the game, we were in run defenses. I know a lot of people say, oh, we're trying to protect the corners. We didn't protect the corners at all this game, okay? All right? Those guys went out there and covered. Mikey played a heck of a football game, all right? Juice and Mike Davis, they played good football games. They went out there and covered. We didn't protect them, all right? We were in the run calls, and the runs got out, all right? So we got to play them better, all right? We were in the calls that we wanted to be in, so that's where I'm disappointed. So because we hit it early, but it's 60 minutes.
I think that's really interesting because one of those run calls was a man-to-man situation, and the edge was open in part because the two corners to that side, Sain Ristil and Igbinoghene, I think this was on the second Saquon long TD run, they just followed their guys in man coverage. And had they had their eyes in the backfield, they could have easily just run off of those receivers who weren't even trying to block. They were trying to do exactly what they did. Hey, it's third down. Let me just run you away from the play and hope that you'll follow me because you're locked into man-to-man coverage, and we know you like man-to-man coverages here. And sure enough, that's exactly what happened. But Witt makes it sound like there's other players that should have been locked in, or maybe even based off the situation, those corners, especially Igbinoghene is the interior of those two, should have been ready to fit that run in a different way. So I think it's really interesting insight from Witt. And we talked about, they protect those corners. I mean, they definitely played some man. They definitely did some of that stuff. But they also, I think, put those corners in good position to cover because they put them in a lot of, like, cover two, two high situations, at least some that I can think of. But there's also times where they also had single high, and, you know, Juice is doing a really good job 30 yards down the field on A.J. Brown. And you're like, oh, after what happened last week, I don't know that I'd be trying that, but Juice did the job. And I think they trusted that their pass rushing would affect Jalen Hurts, and he doesn't see the field particularly well, and did a good job with some disguises. And I don't think Joey Jr.'s fibbing there in any stretch of the imagination. Last but not least in our pick six.
Number six.
The Cowboys have one guy who can absolutely kill you on defense. We talked about it with Micah Parsons. They have one guy who can absolutely kill you on offense, and that is CeeDee Lamb. They will get him his touches. They will try to get him probably close to 15, 20 touches in this game. It'll come on reverses. It'll come on screens. It'll come on deep shots. It'll come with him lined up outside the slot, and that is what makes him such a nightmare for Joe Witt Jr. to prepare for.
Well, CeeDee, first, he can play every position. You know, from the receiver standpoint, you put him in the slot, he's quick, he can beat you over the top. He is great, not good, after the catch. He's, I mean, just excellent. So that's why they put him in the backfield sometimes and toss it to him. He's a good screen runner. He can catch the ball on different locations and different planes. He can contort his body. I think he's just an excellent, excellent football player, and he's tough. I mean, he's just a tough individual. I used to like to say there was only two of those guys, him and Terp, that really would come over there and come in the defensive room, because defensive guys are a little throwed off, and he would come in and sit in there and go back and forth with those guys. And so I have a lot of respect for CeeDee. Like him a lot. He's a good dude.
Good dude, great player. And maybe he's a great dude. I don't know. I don't know CeeDee Lamb at all. But I can tell you he's tremendous football player. And if they can get Marshawn Lattimore back, that would be great. It does not look like that is tracking that way. Dan Quinn will have the news tomorrow. But Lattimore, a DNP for Thursday's practice again after not missing Wednesday, or after missing Wednesday. Quinn said they would try to get him in practice today. Clearly, they did not. So we'll see if Lattimore is going to make his debut Sunday or if it'll be another week until the acquisition of the trade deadline actually puts on a Commander's uniform for the first time. But in the meantime, Sanders still will get his shots. Juice will get his shots. Noah Igbinoghene, who saw him last year in practice, he'll get some shots because CeeDee Lamb will line up in the slot as well. And that Commander's defense has that guy to worry about. And then they just got to tackle well on everyone else. Like Turpin, who Joe Witt talked about there, Turp, as he called him. Like, that dude's electric. He's not that good, but he's electric. Like, if you get the ball in his hands in space, really good. Great route runner, great catcher of the football, like, precise, all that kind of stuff, not so much. And Cooper Rush, like, he's limited. But you give these guys chances in space, and they can hurt you. And so the Commanders, who have been a very good tackling team as of late, have to continue that. And that is the number one thing with Lamb on Sunday. Pick six at six. We do it, at 6 o'clock on every single day of the week. The biggest Commander storylines. We get back at something we normally do on Wednesdays because it's called Competition Wednesday. We'll recap our picks from last week as I was out yesterday, and then we will make three more picks against the spread up next on the Hoffman Show on the Team 980 and always live on the free Odyssey app.